Hi, I'm Kara Ruda. Hi, I'm Kara Ruda. Welcome to the second episode of the Hear Home Hope Online Book Club. And today I have as my guest the wonderful Katrina Kittle. Katrina, thank you so much for joining me.
Oh, it is my pleasure, and it's so much fun to be speaking with you after all these years.
I know, and that was the first thing I was trying to figure out when you agreed to speak with me, how long it's been since we first met. And I think I figured out it was around 1998, which
right,
is a long time ago.
97 or 98, and we met at the wonderful Antioch Writers Workshop in Yellow Springs, Ohio.
And you know what? That was my first ever writer's workshop. Had you been to other ones before that?
I had been to Antioch a couple times before and to one in Indianapolis, the Indiana University, the one in Bloomington.
A
conference. But yeah, and it's so funny to see us now after all this time.
it's been over a decade.
That's crazy.
It's really crazy. And I remember, Katrina, because you were sitting with, I believe, your agent at the time, right? And we were in some, I don't know, a workshop or a class, and I look over and you two are like in deep conversation, and I knew nobody, so I'm just sitting there kind of by myself, and you both looked up and you're like, oh, hi. You kind of welcomed me to come and talk to you. It was so nice, and it was really, you were my first author that I'd met.
Oh my God, I can't even remember.
Yeah, and you were so welcoming and encouraging, and yeah, and then you went on, I guess, right from there to publish your first novel?
That's right. That is right. Wow. You have such a good memory. So that
well,
was
you know what,
right when that book deal was just being formed, I think.
I think I probably wasn't even used to
having an agent yet.
Right. And you were there with her, and you were just so encouraging, and that just is what struck me, I guess, from when I met you there, and then I got a postcard in the mail from you when Traveling Light came out, and I was so proud because I actually knew someone that had made her dreams come to life, and I'd seen you in, I guess, mid-process, so I don't know. I've always been cheering you on from afar and love your work. So it's a thrill to have you here.
Thank you so much, Kara. And I love that. I'm so glad that that's how it went down, that I was so welcoming. And I think, you know, that's so important to me because that workshop in particular was so welcoming to me. And I have found that every time I've gone there, you know, even in the early days before I knew anything, people did that to me. They kind of embraced me. So I'm so glad that I sort of paid it forward. That makes me so happy to hear
that. Oh, you completely did. And that's why all of a sudden you found my manuscript on your doorstep saying, would you consider reading this?
Oh, my gosh, consider. And I was thrilled to. And I cannot wait. I know your publication date is coming up so quickly. And I cannot wait to tell. You know, I go to so many book clubs, and they're always asking me for recommendations. So I've already started to tell them, Hear Home Hope comes out May 1st, you know, and tell them a little about it. So I can't wait to be, you know, shouting from the rooftops when it's actually available. So.
Oh, thank you so much. And really, when I asked Katrina, I sent, I guess, a note through, I don't even know how I found you again, maybe Facebook?
I think it was Facebook. Anyway. Yeah.
And you remembered me and said you would read it when you sent your endorsement back. I did. It was just one of the most touching moments of my life. And I think for anybody listening that has a dream like I've had Katrina knows, since 1997, you have to realize that you were publishing your first book then. I still was dreaming of publishing my first book, and it's finally coming true now that, you know, just to have that kind of an impact on somebody like me, like what you've done, it means the world. It really does. So thank you.
Glad. That's what it's all about, I think.
It is what it's all about. It is.
Yeah.
Okay, so here's another interesting thing that I discovered about us when I was reading your bio, that we were both born in Illinois. Mm-hmm. And where were you born in Illinois?
Geneseo, Illinois. It's a tiny little town. It's kind of up in the Champaign-Urbana area.
Okay. And I was born in Evanston.
I was in married
student housing, I guess. My dad was... Yeah, so I think my first bed was a bathtub, my mom tells me. But anyway, and then, I mean, not with water in it, you know what I mean. And then we both lived in Ohio, me for most of my life until I recently moved, and you're still there in Dayton, right?
That's right. We moved here when I was in first grade. My dad worked on the Air Force Base.
Okay. And I moved there, I believe it was, it was either fifth or sixth grade. My dad's a professor, and he transferred to Ohio State. So that's how I ended up in Ohio.
Okay.
So I think one of the things that I find to be a common thread with both of our writing styles and the topics we like to write about is a Midwestern sensibility. Would you agree with that?
I do, absolutely.
And what does that mean?
Go ahead. Sorry.
Oh, I was just going to say, what does that mean to you?
Well, I think there's a... For one thing I want to say really quickly before I define it is that I sometimes get offended by... folks on either coast, their misconceptions about the Midwest.
Oh, yeah, me too.
Because I think they sort of diminish the people there sometimes. Not everyone, obviously, but there's always this this attitude that I don't even know how to define it, that people are just backwards. Or half the time when I'm speaking to people in Manhattan, they think that we all live on farms. You know what I mean?
Well, that or Iowa and Ohio are interchangeable because we have a lot
right.
of vowels.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, in my manuscript, an editor going through my manuscript for Blessings of the Animals, I said something about the protagonist's husband is a chef and has an Italian restaurant, and at one point after they've divorced, the protagonist decides to go to another Italian restaurant because she's craving Italian food, but she can't go to his. And the editor actually wrote in the margins, "Is there another one in Dayton?" And I'm like, oh my God, there's like 12 off the top of my head I could name, and that's just off the top of my head. So that
right.
idea that, like, you know, we have nothing. Really, you have two restaurants in the same town?
Right.
So anyway, that wasn't what you were asking, but I thought I would put that out there. But to me, the sensibility is, I think there's a courtesy. I think they can be very welcoming, and there's this idea of courtesy of not, it's not overwhelming, not like how it's presented in movies of, like, everyone's just going to come up and talk to you. But there's just that real, an openness, I guess, that you don't see. I don't have that much experience with the coast you're on now, but I've spent a great deal of time on the East Coast and lived in Brooklyn for a time. And I wouldn't say, I disagree with the idea that New Yorkers are rude. I've always found that stereotype not to be true. But there is an openness lacking. Like, if you need help there, all you have to do is ask someone and they will help you. But even if they see you struggling, they're not likely to volunteer to help unless you ask. And I think there is, when you have so many people living together, that's kind of a survival technique. That is a kind of courtesy when a place is that crowded with people. But here, however, like, say I pull over with a flat tire, before I can even call AAA, there's three people pulling over with me to see if I need help. And that, to me, is kind of the Midwest thing of, like, they just kind of reach out. It's that kind of neighborly sort of idea. Is that the kind of thing you were
thinking? Yeah, that's what I think, too, and the sense of community as well,
yeah.
Which it goes hand in hand with reaching out. I feel like, and here, now that I'm on the West Coast, I find people are friendly, but they're, just like you're saying, not as open initially. Perhaps,
yeah.
And I spent a lot of time in the Southeast, and the Southeast, everybody's very friendly on the surface, and then it takes longer to get to know them more deeply. And it's in the Midwest, I do believe people are more open, and pretty much more or less what you see is what you get, in a sense.
I do think that is very true.
I guess it's kind of both, we're not as guarded or we didn't come from a place of having to be as guarded because perhaps we don't, you know, the population isn't, and it's not intensely populated, but it's also, I think that we're used to sticking together from the Midwest to defend
yeah.
ourselves.
Because that's true. It was back in the old days with the way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But also from the assaults from the coast when people are making fun of us, because if you think about the majority of the population of the U.S. lives in the center of the
yeah.
country, and not on the coast. So it's an interesting, dichotomy, I guess. I used to talk when I spent time in New York or out in the West Coast, and people would say, oh, you're somewhere in that middle. I'm like, yeah, but the middle
right.
is where everyone is.
The middle, the flyover.
Yeah, the flyover, yeah. But I do. I think it infuses, when you're talking about fiction, I think it infuses maybe a lightness or a more open sensibility that when people read it, they can almost identify it with your characters almost more instantly. At least that's the feedback I've been getting about the characters in my book, and that's how I feel about the characters in your stories as well.
Oh, thank you, Kara. And I do think that's very true of the characters in Here, Home, Hope.
Well, thank you.
Very much.
Well, thanks. Okay, now I have a kind of a segue question for you, but
okay.
I noticed that you're releasing Reasons to be Happy, your first young adult story.
Yes.
How did that come about?
Well, you know, I have to blame it on an editor I've never actually worked with yet. Her name is Sharon November, and she is amazing. And she is not my editor. She's not even at my publishing house, but she wrote me the most beautiful note after The Kindness of Strangers came out, telling me that she really loved the boys' voices in that novel, and had I ever considered writing for a young adult audience. And I hadn't, and we struck up this great email correspondence, and I was so flattered by her interest. And she really helped educate me, where she, you know, I was teaching middle school at the time, and she was saying, you know, it's so different now. They cover every single topic. She sent me huge boxes of books for my classroom of all these, you know, Laurie Hall Anderson, all these authors I wasn't aware of yet and should have been. And she was absolutely right. They were covering every single topic, because I tend to go with some, people say they're edgier topics in my books. My books always kind of center around a social issue that I care about. That's where they start from. And,
right.
You know, so I've taken on AIDS and addiction and things like that. And so I was thinking, well, I'm not a match for that audience. And she was like, oh, yes, you are. And she sent me all these examples. And so it started because of her. She kind of prodded me into, like, well, maybe I would do this. And then, strangely enough, at the time, there was no story pulling on me that I thought was a story for that audience. And then Blessings of the Animals, at one point, had gotten so out of control and so big and was about too many things. And my wonderful, wonderful agent, Lisa Benkoff, was asking, how is it going? And I'm like, it's too long and it's about too many things. She's like, let me see some of it. And I was like, you know, I'm trying to make excuses. I'm saying, well, it's snowing, I can't go to the post office. She's like, email me some pages. You know, I was like, oh, my God. So I had to email her 100 pages, and then she asked for more, and she's like, you're right, it's about too many things. This is really two books. And she was really good at extricating these two plots from each other. And so the one plot got peeled away and kind of shelved while I finished what was really the book. And when I came back to it, I thought, and I was looking at this character who had been kind of taken from the book, and I'm like, yeah, she gets her own book, I think. And I think she's finally going to be that young adult book. And she was. And so that was, it's kind of in a weird, that's a real circuitous route into the story. And it is being marketed to tweens. It's more like a 6th and 7th grade book. But the book I'm working on now is very much young adult for like a high school audience. And it's just really strange. And Sharon November also gave me the great advice where she said, don't think about the audience. Just write me a Katrina Kittle book where the protagonists happen to be teenagers. And I think
that's what I was
really
going to ask you.
Great
advice. Because it's your same writing and your same writing style. It's just that the protagonists are the age of your intended audience.
Exactly. Yeah.
That's
but she
so
was
neat.
Like, don't stray away from the way you face subject matter in your adult books. It should be the same honesty, that same kind of unflinching if you're going to take on a topic. And so in this book, Reasons to be Happy, it's eating disorder, body image, which has been done a bunch of times before, but we think we have some interesting twists on it, including that the protagonist ends up in Ghana for several weeks, where she's plunked into a culture where she has no idea what is even considered beautiful there. So all of her conceptions are kind of turned on their head. But that comes out in October, and I'm so excited to be doing something entirely new.
Yeah, and how? So if you're when you're talking to 6th and 7th graders, and you taught them before, right? So you have experience with them, and kind of. But how do kids who are 6th and 7th graders, do they discover those books on their own, or is it through their classrooms, or how do you get your book for a tween audience into their hands? Is it
the regular way? Wow, that's
a
great question, because this is going to be a big education for me. When I was a teacher, I knew that there were kids who frequently brought books to me that they were reading, and I'm like, I would see them have them, or the kids who were just voracious readers were the ones who were telling me about authors and titles.
Right.
But then there's also, you know, catalogs, and I would do a certain amount of bookstore kind of, you know, just always skulking around looking in those sections to see what was there. And great librarians and great booksellers who could help me out with that. So occasionally I would be turning them on to things, but a lot of times it was the kids who were the really just big-time readers.
Are they finding books online or through their parents, or how are they?
I think all of the above, to be honest.
All yeah. Because I know my an eighth grader, and he's a moderate reader. He's not what I would, you know, like be excited about, but he's at least reading, and he gets a lot from his friends. And then I guess a little bit from school, but he's less likely to read something a teacher tells him than something a friend tells him.
That's true, yeah.
So, yeah, I was just thinking, what a fun audience to write for, and also how do you get it into their hands?
Yeah, well, I'll be learning lots about that in these months to come. I need to take a crash course in that, I think.
I don't know. That sounds really fun. Well, I that's so exciting too, because I think if you can reach kids at that age with a fun story but also a deeper message, what a perfect fit. And you're the gal to do it. So,
thank you. I hope so. We shall see.
Oh no, it'll be awesome. Okay, here's another question for you. Teaching writing versus writing. I know you do a lot of workshops, and well, actually, you should tell us all the things you're doing, but how do you keep, I guess, your time for your writing in one place, and then you're out sharing your knowledge about writing and about the craft in another? Does that ever compromise the story you're working on, or is it easy for you to keep them distinct?
I can keep them distinct, but sometimes I will have too much of one or the other. Rarely do I feel like I have too much writing time. I should take that back. But occasionally some of the workshops or classes that I'm invited to do will kind of be all clustered together, and that can feel a little stressful because I try to be so disciplined about the writing time. And my friends claim that I'm, you know, obsessive and neurotic about the discipline. But, you know, when you work for yourself, when I was able to leave full-time teaching, there's a big, serious fear factor of, I don't want to blow this. I don't know how long I can make this last. It's a very crazy way, unreliable way to make a living. You know, so I have to be productive. I can't waste time. So I do stick to that. But what I find is when I am able to schedule them well and have them kind of spaced out nicely, where it's not like, you know, a week where I'm doing something every single evening or during the day hours outside of my home, you know, teaching, if I can space it out a little, it's actually a beautiful balance where they really feed each other. Where I recently finished a workshop where I limited it to 6 writers who had all finished novel-length manuscripts, and I was essentially teaching them how to workshop each other's stuff. They hadn't gone through, you know, programs where they learned how to do that. And then my hope is that they will go on to, you know, continue to stay in touch with each other and continue to workshop each other's stuff, but they don't have to pay me to do it anymore, you know. So,
right.
But they were such good writers and so inspiring, and I try to teach them to be, you know, we have to tell the truth to each other, but you can do that and be kind, because I've seen workshops that are just horrible and trash people, and it should always be a case where people are leaving a workshop setting feeling inspired and feeling like they have all these possibilities to make their work even better. You never want someone walking out feeling crushed or feeling as if they shouldn't write anymore, you know. And no matter how flawed a piece of writing is, there you can always make it better. And so, but I find I get so inspired, and especially with the workshopping, teaching craft is the same, but especially with workshopping a piece, I find that what I'm picking out in other people's writing to improve, I can turn that on myself, and like usually it's a perfect reminder of like I am doing the exact same thing in my manuscript. I need to revisit that in my own piece, and it's just really good. I learn. I think I get more from workshopping other people's pieces than I do having my own stuff workshopped, and I try to tell other writers that. They usually don't believe me until they've been through it themselves, and then they're like, "Oh yeah, I see what you mean."
Yeah, that just surprised me, right? What you said, because I can't. Really?
Yeah. It keeps you on your toes, and it's just a really good reminder, and I'll be very inspired by the chances they're taking and the passion they have, and it kind of reminds me how lucky I am to be where I am. So I think it's a really good thing. I like to do the teaching. I really miss, you know, otherwise, you know, writing is such a solitary profession that I could so easily become a hermit if I wasn't careful, and so this is a very nice, healthy thing for me to get out and do.
Right. it's forcing yourself out in the world. I know that was one of the biggest lessons I found even after I published my nonfiction book, that once you write a book, you have to go talk to people about it. You can't stay in your little room and
write the next
one. Right, exactly. As much as you really want to just do that, I would imagine that your gift for teaching comes in handy because you can at least make it about what everybody else is doing and not about yourself. I find it so hard to talk about, you know, me or my writing. I'd much rather talk about other people, other people's things.
No, I know what you mean. Yes. And I remember emailing my publicist once last August when my most recent book came out, and I was out on the road and touring a bit, and I came home and he was asking how things went, and I sent him an email where I'm like, I think I said something like, I just picked up a pizza and some beer, and I have the next season of Dexter, and I'm staying home this weekend, and I am not talking about myself. He laughed, you know, but it was like, it was just, you feel so grateful, but it also gets, you know, you feel so grateful that people are interested and that they care, obviously, but then, you're like, okay, enough about me. What's everybody else doing? What's everyone else writing? What's everyone else working on?
Right, yeah, because I
help us. Right.
I know it is. You want people to want to meet your books, but you don't necessarily want them to feel like they have to. It is flattering at the same time. But it's an interesting circle. But it's so nice that you can take that and put it into the teaching area because that's where you can really help people and also not have to be. It's about their work, then you get to move on. And I know you're doing. So what kinds of workshops do you like to teach the best? I mean, is it the manuscripts and workshopping those, or is it what do you like the best?
I like them. I honestly like them all, and I've kind of gotten to the point where I feel very fortunate because if it doesn't sound like something I want to do, I don't have to do it.
That's really nice.
I love the workshops, but I don't like to do too many of those in a row because that's homework, where you're taking pieces home and critiquing them and reading them. And the craft classes are wonderful because you can go in and give all your energy in those hours that you're there, but then nothing comes home with you. It's just back to your own writing. So the workshops, as much as I love them, I can't do too many at once or in a row because I get to where I'm like, I want, you know, again, it kind of intrudes a little on the writing time. But there's a lot of craft classes and where you just kind of, you're doing exercises and you're just kind of introducing people to this week we're going to focus on voice and we look at a bunch of passages and they do exercises and then next week we're really looking at point of view or dialogue or characterization and just really delving into other published works with people and looking at how they do this, you know, look how Barbara Kingsolver does this as opposed to Cormac McCarthy, you know, and just looking at popular and maybe not so well-known passages. And I'm very excited. I have a two-day workshop coming up in Gaylord, Michigan, April 29th and 30th, that I'm so excited about. This great little bookstore that I've visited three times on tour now over the years invited me to come do this. They're called Saturn Booksellers, and they are probably my favorite bookstore on the planet. And so it'll be Friday evening and then all day on that Saturday, and we still have room to squeeze in a few more if anyone's interested. Their website is just saturnbooksellers.com. And all the registration info is on their website.
And where is Gaylord, Michigan? Is it upper Michigan?
It is. Well, I don't know Michigan that well. I'm going to sound horrible. I don't want to sound like one of those people we were just complaining about. Where I know.
You mean you don't know every city in the Midwest? Come on.
It's about an hour south of Traverse City.
Okay. Okay.
Because I know that's the airport I most usually use when I go up there. But this time I'm going to drive. But it's the greatest little bookstore in the world, and they are the most amazing booksellers. You know, a store where you walk in and they know everything. They know, oh, if you like this, then you'll like blah, 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 and they've never steered me wrong, you know, putting good books in my hands. I love stores like that.
I know, me too. That's the best feeling when it's just an art form to be able to put readers together with books they're going to love and introduce. I mean, gosh, yeah, that's what we need more of in the world. Absolutely. And I've never been there, but if I was there, I would come see you. I would come to your class because it sounds really good. It does.
Well, and when I am there, I'm going to be sure to talk to them about your upcoming novel.
Oh, that would be great.
Jill Miner is their owner, and she's just a powerhouse. They won, for such a small store, they won a bunch of awards for just being amazing. They're pretty known in the publishing world, and so I will definitely talk up this wonderful book. You know, because I'm asked to blurb a lot of stuff, and it's always really painful if you read something and you're like, oh, I don't know. But I was so your novel, Kara. Sometimes you feel like there's a book that was written for you. As you're reading it, you almost feel like, how did they know this? You know, and yours was just one of those amazing books about somebody reinventing themselves that I thought, it just really touched me. I'm like, I know I keep saying it, but I mean it so much that I'm just so excited to tell people about it. I can't wait.
And as I've said, that just means the world to me, truly. And it makes me feel all speechless. So thank you, because I know that you're kind anyway, so you would probably have said yes anyway. So
Sometimes I can't. Like, it just depends. If I'm teaching too much, if I have too many things, I finally have learned my lesson.
Right, to not overcommit.
Sometimes I have to say no. If it's going to feel like an obligation, I just can't do it. So the timing was right, and then I ended up falling in love with it. So
Thank you so much. I know, and I love all of your books too. And your latest is The Blessing of Animals, and it's a story of reinvention as well. And I think that's it's kind of, to me, in the air right now. All of this reinvention, I guess, with the economy and with people taking a look at really what matters in life and where they want to put their energy. There's only so much time, and you have today, and you've got to figure out what it's going to do, what you can do to maximize it. And I feel like that's a theme that's just circling around out there, and you were aware of it sooner and out there sooner, but I hope people will read yours as well.
Oh, thank you so much. Thank you.
And I'm trying to think if there's anything else, and I don't think we have any callers, so I think we're a wrap on our online book club. So I really, really appreciate your time so much, Katrina. Thank you so much.
My pleasure.
And good luck in everything you're doing, and I can't wait to read your first young adult and tween books. Those are going to be wonderful, and I've got a house full of teens and young adults that I can share them with, which is great. And I hope to see you when I'm in Dayton for my book tour, because I would love to see you in person. Okay.
We will make that happen for sure.
That'd be great. All right. Well, thank you so much, and have a great day.
Pleasure.
And I will talk to you soon. Thanks.
All right.
Okay.
Take good care. Bye-bye.
Okay, you too. Bye-bye.
Left you on a debris at the Sunday morning market. You were starting to the odds and ends. You was looking for a bargain. I heard your footsteps at the front door. That old familiar love song. Gosh, you knew you'd find me waiting there at the top of the stairs. At the depot, with the General Workers Union, and yet that they'll never change a thing. Well, they won't fight, and they're not working.